Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach. On today's episode, we are talking all about gynecological cancers. This is something that most people are not familiar with, and I thought it's really important to cover what are some things to look for when potentially a gynecological cancer is the cause. So I have a special guest joining me to share all about that, and I hope you enjoy. Before we get into today's episode, I want to tell you about my Sexy Box. Sexy Box is the quarterly subscription box with all of the hottest intimacy enhancement products. This Sexy Box is valued at over $100 and it's yours for only $74.99. And trust me, usually they are worth way more than $100. Highly recommend getting yours right away. To get your Sexy Box, go to sexybox.jordandonnell.com. Link is in the bio. I also wanted to tell you about my new swag that is out. I have created some new shirts, Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators. Oh my, I masturbated today, manifesting dope shit, and it's just a vibe. There are some awesome new shirts out there that you will want to wear to represent and support the Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators podcast. So go to swag.jordandonnell.com to get yours today. Link will also be in the bio. Joining me today is Dr. Nicole Williams, an OB-GYN doctor based out of Chicago. She opened the Gynecological Institute of Chicago in 2013 and is about to launch her first book ever, This Is How You Vagina, all about your vajayjay and why you probably shouldn't call it that, an easy-to-understand guide about the woman's body. Her world travel experiences and core belief in giving back has not only shaped her medical practice, but her entire life. Dr. Williams has an extensive research background for women's health. She is dedicated to the welfare of women and travels each year to communities in need, such as the Dominican Republic, Haiti, Cambodia, Ghana, and the Philippines, to help perform necessary gynecological surgeries. Dr. Nicole joins me today to talk all about gynecological questions to help us understand what we should be looking for and what isn't normal. Dr. Nicole, would you like to go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, so happy to be on with you, Jordan. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Dr. Nicole Williams. I'm a Chicago-based OBGYN. And during the pandemic, where everybody was locked down, I started thinking about my patients and all the questions they had. And I decided, you know what? Let me write about it. And I thought I was going to write a little ebook about 10, 12 pages. Oh, here's your frequently asked questions. But it just kept ballooning and ballooning. Oh my God, I just thought about this thing. Let me think about this thing. And I started doing all this research about how women have perceived their vaginas since antiquity on. And I have found that how much has really changed. And I want to change that paradigm. And so that's basically me in a nutshell.
I love that. And I totally can relate. Like, that's similar background for me, is that I had this platform where I was educating a small group of women about their bodies, pelvic organ prolapse, you know, their intimacy, their arousal response cycle, and things that we don't commonly talk about. And that's where the podcast came from, is that I wanted to make sure that women got more information about their bodies, because we're not taught about the, quote, things that are not necessarily normal, but we don't know what's normal to know that it's not normal.
Absolutely. That's always been such a concern of mine. And then when we're in this space, there's also so much misinformation that you'll see. And it's so easy for patients to just go with that because it's the shiny object. But we want to put truth to vagina power. And that's why I'm just happy to be here.
Yes, I love it. So today we're talking about gynecological cancers because September is Gynecological Cancer Awareness Month. And I think this is something that we don't very often talk about. And at the same time, a lot of symptoms may arise that people don't know they should go see their doctor about. So you want to maybe just tell us a little bit about the different types of gynecological cancers there are.
When we're talking about gynae cancers, we're talking about cancers of the reproductive tract of the female. So you can get cancer in any of these items down in that particular area. So you're talking about it can be uterine cancer. It could actually be fallopian tube cancer, ovarian cancer, cancer of the peritoneum, which is the blanket surrounding the entire pelvis. And of course, cervical cancer and vaginal vulvar cancer. So there's a litany of cancers. And so when we're talking about which are most curable, which are the most aggressive. So the most curable is probably cervical cancer. The reason you have to go for a pap smear every year, well, now they've changed the guidelines every 2 to 3 years. Now we have a lot more information. But the reason was because back in the 50s, when Dr. Papanikolaou, that's his actual name, realized you can actually see the organ, take cells from it, and that those cells started to change before they turned into cancer. And it was killing young women back then. Now, basically, cervical cancer is essentially, it's something we can cure before we even get it. Not to mention, we have an amazing vaccine at the ready that you can get before you become sexually active, because we know that that particular cancer is caused by a virus. Now, the most aggressive of GYN cancers is ovarian cancer, because it's a great pretender. It's not like cervical cancer where you can go and just take a scrape of your ovary every couple of years and make sure you're not getting cancer. Unfortunately, it's a very, very tricky cancer to diagnose because you get vague symptoms like bloating, you feel full, pelvic heaviness. And when I hate to say this, but there are a lot of practitioners out there who still write women's symptoms off, which is a major issue. So if you have a patient who's coming in, she's like, well, I've been having this kind of bloating, and they go, oh, that's just bloating. It's fine. We have to be aggressive about this, like looking for that particular type of cancer, because it's so aggressive. And unfortunately, it's often found after it's advanced.
Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right that a lot of providers, especially I'm familiar with primary care, and I work in REI right now, but in primary care, like it does get kind of blown off as, oh, you know, maybe you have a dairy or a gluten issue. A lot of bloating.
As we're female and we have gut problems, but we forget there's a heck of a lot more down there that could be going on other than just, oh, indigestion, it's associated with my period or something like that. Just because we're menstruating people doesn't mean that everything that goes on with us has to do with our periods.
Yeah. And I think that that really is important to advocate for your own health when you feel like something isn't right and you don't get the answers that you want. Like, you need to keep advocating.
Right. Or find somebody else who's going to listen. Now, I'm not going to say, oh, you should get every test in the world done. But if you feel as if you are not being heard, then absolutely talk to your friends and then find yourself a new practitioner, at least get a second opinion.
Exactly. And how common are gynecological cancers, would you say?
Gyne cancers are, so we know breast cancer is probably the most common cancer. Unfortunately, that's 1 in 8. The next most common gyne cancer is uterine cancer, or what we call endometrial cancer. Now, that cancer is the most common one that we're going to see. I don't know the exact number because the population basis has changed. And in actuality, during the pandemic, we've missed a lot more cancer because people weren't going to the doctor, going to their practitioners, and they've been bleeding at home. And so we're actually trying to catch up, because endometrial cancer is a cancer that's also quite curable and you see it. But that is the most common because it's really a condition of excess estrogen. Estrogen, I tell my patients, estrogen's like champagne. You want just a bit. Then you're bubbly and you're effervescent and you feel great. But if you take too much champagne, it is the worst inebriation that there is, and you are completely out of it. That's estrogen in a woman's body. So what happens if you have too much estrogen, the lining of the uterus will just keep growing. So estrogen is responsible for the proliferation of the lining that you're going to get your period from. You have estrogen first, then you have progesterone. Estrogen goes up and it grows the lining. Progesterone makes the lining nice and stable. If you have too much estrogen, it's going to keep growing. What's cancer? It just keeps growing. And that is the problem. So what happens is it outgrows its blood supply. Then you start bleeding, but you're thinking, oh, I'm just having an extra period or an early period. And women who are used to bleeding heavily, they just write it off. And that's when I tell my patients, look, any abnormal pattern in your bleeding. So I don't just ask, when was your last period? Has there been a pattern change? And just to make sure, now, is it happening more often? Is it happening mid-cycle? Is it happening longer? If it is, then that might be something I would want to work up. Now, generally, GYN cancers occur in those that are 50 plus. I mean, uterine cancers are the ones that happen 50 plus, but still could happen. The youngest patient I ever diagnosed a uterine cancer on was 27.
Wow, that's crazy. I typically associate uterine cancers with menopausal women. And at least from schooling, that's what I know. What are some other signs to look for that would be like red flags that you should go see your provider when it comes to gynecological cancers?
So when I talk about how are we going to work this up? What are warning signs, danger signs? I tell my patients, we want to look for any change in your pattern. So for cervical cancer, are you bleeding after sex? Is that something new for you? I've had patients with kind of chronic cervicitis and we've been treating it on and off for years and years. That's part of your pattern. Then we know that's not necessarily a danger sign. If you have known GI issues and you've been diagnosed by a physician, then yes, we know that bloating could be a part of something like IBS or Crohn's. But if that's a change in your pattern, then bring it to our attention. Back to bleeding, back to endometrial uterine cancer, if that's a pattern change for you. If you normally have a period for 8 to 10 days and it's not that bad, that's okay. But if you start to bleed very heavily, you're bleeding through your protection, you're starting to lose weight, anything that is outside of what your normal healthy pattern is, bring it to your physician or practitioner's attention.
Absolutely. And those similar symptoms you see with like fibroids and other things as well. So it may not necessarily be cancer, but at the same time, going to see your provider to get answers is so important.
Absolutely. Hear.
So family history. I know there's a huge thing with family history and breast cancer. Is there any association with family history and gynecological cancers?
So when we're talking about GYN cancers and family history, it's uterine cancer has an association with what's called Lynch syndrome. Lynch syndrome is a genetic inherited cancer causing condition that will either result in cancer in the uterus, cancer in the pancreas. And if you have this, or if you have a family history of people with a lot of colon cancer, and then you have people with a lot of uterine cancer, that's one that we can work that up. And then what we do is I actually had a patient who was just diagnosed with Lynch syndrome just last week. We are incredibly aggressive at screening these patients because we know that they're at a higher risk for both GI, so they have to get a GI workup, and for uterine cancer. Now, there's also the BRCAs. These are just the two common ones that we know about, BRCAs 1 and 2. So if you do have a BRCA, we know that that can result in an increased risk over the baseline, which is 1 in 8, of breast cancer. If you have BRCA type 1, then you also have an increased risk of ovarian cancer. Actually, Angelina Jolie several years ago, she elected to have a bilateral mastectomy and her ovaries removed because she carried that gene and she wanted to be proactive about her health. And I say that was phenomenal because it brought that to the attention of many other women who might have been on the fence about, well, I have this family history. I don't know. Maybe I'll just keep getting mammograms. If you do have the gene, then you should do something about it. Now, here's another thing I do want to bring out because my patients will say, well, I don't have a family history of breast cancer. Well, maybe I don't need to. I can skip a mammogram. We do know that breast cancer happens in 1 in 8. Breast cancers are only about 20% of breast cancers are genetic. So all the rest of the breast cancers are 1 in 8. So please, please, please don't skip that one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So I haven't decided what I'm doing for that yet, but it is so important to get your mammograms. It's important to get your pap smears. Like, these are little things that we can do as providers to minimize the risk or be looking for things early on to prevent cancer potentially, or at least detect it early.
Right. It's so simple too. So simple. My patients just say, they're coming in for their pap smear. That's uncomfortable. And then they're like, oh, well, mammograms hurt. I'm like, I just had a pap smear. I'm good at it, but it's still not like I'm looking forward to having my pap smear. And they're like, well, they smush your boob. And I'm like, well, cancer hurts worse. So just smush a boob.
I never even thought about that, like how the pain of cancer, like I've never had a mammogram, so I don't know. It's a handful of minutes of being uncomfortable that could potentially change your life.
And how many uncomfortable things do women do on their daily basis anyway?
A ton. So let's see. Is there anything that you can do to prevent cancer?
The cancers that we have the most information on, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So for cervical cancer, just go in and get your screening, get your HPV, get your pap test, super important. For endometrial cancers, we know that if our patients are a little bit heavy, if they're overweight over a really long period of time, that is an independent risk factor. So yes, we can help by staying as healthy as we can, keeping our weights, even our BMI, something reasonable. Of course, don't smoke. We know that's a basic, but we do know that smoking can increase the risk of all comers cancer. There's so many different ones, I could start rattling them off. So those are just common sense things. So really, there's nothing that we can do like genetically with our genes, but there are certainly things that we can do with our own lifestyle choices to minimize those risks.
Do you have any particular diet recommendations? I know there's a lot of theories out there about like maybe an anti-inflammatory type diet or different types of diets. Do you have any thoughts on that?
My favorite diet recommendation is the Mediterranean diet. Why? Because it's full of healthy olive oil, it's full of delicious fish, and it gives you all sorts of anti-inflammatories and omega-3s, and it's delicious on top of that. And then you don't feel like you're following some kind of like people go keto and all these other things. That's not pleasant. There's enough suffering in life. Mediterranean food is probably the healthiest. Now, when you go to Greece, you'll see people, they'll drink like 8 cups of coffee and have 17 cigarettes in the morning. I don't advocate that bit because I've been there and they're drinking and coffee and cigarettes, but their diets are great. So it's like if they're smoking and drinking 8 cups of coffee and they're having all their wonderful Greek food, I think they come out to a balance. So of course, no smoking and 8 cups of coffee, but hummus, olive oils, plenty of fish, chicken, lamb. These are the things that are absolutely wonderfully delicious, and they're going to provide you all the anti-inflammatories that you're going to need.
I love that. And I wish that there were better resources for patients about diet, or particularly women and menstruating women. I read a book in The Flow, and it talked about how there are no studies done on menstruating women when it comes to diet. And most studies on diet are done with men or menopausal women. And well, it just makes it so hard to know if that works for somebody like myself. We don't really know.
Right. It wasn't until 1994 that the National Institutes of Health mandated that studies include women. Let that sink in. You guys are probably getting born and we were just saying, oh yeah, let's include women in academic study. So that is a huge thing. And also, I've done some research about certain supplements that can help with menstruating people. And I found that magnesium can be helpful. And like we talked about, it's especially in terms of helping to prevent or reduce cramps, because magnesium and calcium are close to one another on the periodic table. Calcium is one of the molecules that helps muscles contract. Magnesium and calcium kind of look alike. And if you can flood those receptors with something that looks like it, but is not the thing, it's not going to cramp as bad. So that's one supplement I do. And of course, your omega-3s help to decrease overall inflammation and also can help to reduce some of your premenstrual syndrome symptoms. Now, caveat, that we need more data. Like I said, it wasn't until 1994. And if you look at databases, studies that have men in them still have so much more money, so much more funding than studies that are primarily female-centered. That paradigm needs to change. That's something I've been talking about for years, but it is changing, you know, incremental steps, and we're going to get there.
Yeah, it's coming. And I think that there's been a huge push for women's health more recently. And so like, it's definitely coming. I am curious, like in your book, if you want to maybe tell us a little bit about some of the questions that you talk about, or maybe read an excerpt. Is there anything you'd like to share about?
So, like we talked about, I wrote a pandemic book, like everybody said they were going to do. And I just kept going and going. When I talk about, each chapter is named after a different vagina thing. So we have birthing vaginas, we have bloody vaginas, we have itchy vaginas. There's something on my vagina. What the heck is that? It's probably a mole. I wanted my patients to understand that most of the time, your vagina is normal, because we have been bred to believe that our vaginas are these diseased, disgusting, the cesspool of bacteria. And I'm like, yes, there are bacteria and we love them. The good ones help us stay in balance. They help maintain our pH. What's that smell? My vagina's smelly. Well, guess what? That might be your signature scent, because the healthy bacteria in your vagina, plus the healthy bacteria that are on our vulvae, they work together to help us to maintain a healthy balance. So in the book, I talk about not only progressing vaginas from ancient Greece, ancient Egypt, through Victorian England, all the way to today. I also talk about some of the basic questions that my patients asked and helped it make sense. Now, additionally, so if you want me to read a little excerpt, if you can.
I would love that if you're interested. I feel like these are a lot of questions that I get on the regular as well in the work that I do. A lot about odor, smell, or odor, even taste was a question I got more recently. So I would love to read an excerpt or have you read an excerpt.
Wow, fascinating. This is from actually My Vagina Smells and There's Something Coming Out. So my patients are always saying, okay, so what's with the smell? So the most common reason to come to the gynecologist, even more than yeast infections, is a smelly vagina with something coming out of it. And although the vast majority is normal, the most common cause for pathologic discharge is BV, which is not a sexually transmitted infection, but there are plenty of risk factors. So we talk a little bit about BV, and then we actually talk about how the whole fish misnomer came into being. And that came from way back. So the fish symbol has been associated with women since ancient Greece. Women have been associated with fish since Greek and Syrian cultures. The words for fish and womb are actually synonymous. And the Syrian goddess was pictured as a mermaid, as is most people's favorite coffee beverage. The well-known fish symbol was once a pagan symbol for women and fertility. So much for that fishy smell everybody's complaining about, because that is actually an empowering thing.
Wow, that is so interesting. I cannot wait to read this book. I'm definitely going to have to pre-order it, because I feel like there's so much good stuff in there. Where will the listeners be able to get the book?
You can find it on Amazon. It's also at Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and you can find it on Bookshop and many of the major book outlets. And I'm also working with a lot of smaller bookstores, because as a small business owner myself, I really want to promote and help small businesses out. So I will be kind of crisscrossing the country later on as the pandemic allows to promote the book and talk to very small bookstore owners. So all over.
I love it. And what's the title of the book?
It is called This Is How You Vagina, All About Your Vajayjay and Why You Probably Shouldn't Call It That.
Yes. So if the listeners take one thing away from today's conversation, what would you want it to be?
I want your listeners to embrace their lovely, beautiful, flawed, smelly, bloody, amazing vaginas.
Yes, that is such a perfect thing to take away, because all vaginas and vulvas are beautiful and perfect the way they are. Where can the listeners find you at?
I have two different websites. I'm on IG at Dr. Nicole Life. We are also on IG at Gynecology Institute. My website for the book is thisishowyouvagina.com. And the website for my practice is gynecologyinstitute.com.
Love it. Thank you so much for chatting with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much. It was super fun.
This episode is sponsored by Pure Romance by Jordan Jones, offering top bath and beauty products and relationship enhancement items. Check out the link in the bio to start shopping today. By shopping, you are supporting this podcast.
Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode, and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again, and see you next episode.